Another edition of the Daft on Draft podcast, a Friday edition of the Daft on Draft podcast. So far this week, we've hit a mailbag, we've hit some other fun stuff, we hit a Daft on or Daft for Draft. We've done some pretty cool stuff. We're going to finish out our top 10 running back rankings. A couple weeks ago, we did 1 through 5, and then we got kind of caught up doing some other
peripheral
topics.
Yeah. It's not like we haven't been doing the podcast. We've just been doing other stuff. We haven't gotten back to the running backs yet.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to come back to the running backs and do 6 through 10 today. So we'll go through and recap our backs 1 through 5 before we dive in. But before we do that, Dalton, we heard your lovely voice, but how are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling fantastic. We had a death in the family, and that's a really weird two statements to make right there back to back, but the passing means that my wife is going to fly back to the United States for a couple of days next week, which means I get to see my wife and my wife gets to see her son. And so, bad, you know, death, but just a little bit of good coming out of it. And I should also know next week, hopefully, when I am able to fly back to Portugal. And it might be as soon as when my wife flies back to Portugal next Friday. So we'll see. We'll see. A lot coming up. A lot coming down the pipe. But
yeah, so we might have some confused listeners. Why don't, as much as you're willing to share your brief overview of what is going on in your life and why you've been in Pennsylvania and your wife is in Portugal. And
yeah, so the quick of it is I was supposed to get my residency in Portugal through family reunification, but bureaucracy in Portugal is even worse than it is here in the United States when it comes to the government. So that never really happened. And so I went off on my own to get my own visa through a different process. And so I was here for 2 months before I could get the appointment to go for the visa. So I've been in the United States for 5 months waiting for this visa to pop up. And the 26th of February is the 60-day mark of when they have to make a decision. I was told that it would take all 60 days because, again, bureaucracy. And so I'm just awaiting that decision and awaiting when I can go back to Portugal. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So there we go. It's going to change our recording schedule because when Dalton is in Portugal, we're on like a 5-hour time difference. So,
That'll be fun.
Dalton toughed out some late nights. We'd record double headers and then have 4 episodes on 2 nights. Mm-hmm. And then I could edit and parse them out. So we're gonna have to go back to that, but it's been nice being in the same time zone for a little bit, but we will adjust and we will fall back into it for sure. All right, well, let's dive in here. So recapping our 1 through 5, we had one slight difference, Dalton, but as soon as we stopped recording, you said, yeah, my grading scale was a little messed up. So would you like to clarify your backs 1 through 5, what it was when we recorded versus what it is now?
I would. It was Ashton JNT, Caleb Johnson, Omarion Hampton, Trevion Henderson, and then Trevor Etienne. And I saw that I had a mistake on my grading scale. I have an upside multiplier. And I had accidentally undersold Trevion Henderson on the multiplier. And so he did actually jump Omarion Hampton. So now it is Ashton JNT, Caleb Johnson, Trevion Henderson, Omarion Hampton, and Trevor Etienne. And I'm happy about that because that's the way that I feel in my heart. And what you have to understand is, like, I have feelings about these players. And I've talked about Brian Thomas Jr. before. I was not a huge fan of his, but my grading scale was. And I didn't think he was a first-round player. My grading scale thought he was. And my grading scale ended up being really freaking right. And so for me, it's a way to take some of my eye and heart bias out of it. But it is nice when guys like Trevion Henderson, somebody who I adore very much, end up ahead of guys who I like just a little bit less.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. I could say for me, like a player that this year is like James Pierce. Like, I don't love James Pierce, but then like I break apart every single trait of his game. And it's like, well, he's all of the traits are there. So he grades really high on all the traits. And it's like, well, what the heck, man? But yeah, 6 through 10, let's dive in. We have some nuance here compared to 1 through 5, where my 1 through 5 is also Ashton Jeanty, Caleb Johnson, Travion Henderson, Omarion Hampton, and Trevor Etienne. So running back 10, Dalton, who do you got at running back 10, working our way down to 6?
I have a theme of these guys here from 6 to 10 are going to be fumbling issues. I'm just going to point that out immediately. Yeah. At number 10, we have Virginia Tech's Bashal Tutten, who has
definition of fumbling issues.
Maybe the worst fumbling issues that I have ever seen from a back, from a numerical perspective. But man, so quick-footed laterally. His ability to really get width on jump cuts. Solid first-level vision, especially, you know, when he is running outside zone. He quickly redirects, gets immediately to that backfield. Backfield. Yes, that is actually what I have. Can immediately redirect to immediate backfield threats. So if there is a free runner, he is able to operate peripherally, see that, and be able to make that first man miss. So a 4-yard loss turns into a 0-yard or a 1-yard gain instead of a 4-yard loss. Fluid feet, solid downhill explosiveness at the second level. He tests pursuit angles. He's got juice. I think what I saw was like a 4.52 estimated 40 time. I think that's about where he's at. He can maybe not run away from ACC opponents, but he's not getting caught by guys. And that's really what I look for in running backs. You're not going to find many guys who are just flat out outrunning people at the running back position. But if you are able to stay steady with most defensive backs, then I'm going to believe in your ability to create explosive plays a little bit more. He shows willingness as a pass protector. I don't think he's a particularly good pass protector. And there are a couple other issues. Obviously, the horrific ball security. the not many traditional drop back pass protection reps in Virginia Tech's offense. It's a lot of RPO. Kind of helping out, kind of faking the run. Knee injuries in both 23 and 24. Now he played through them, and his production while playing through injury and his ability to make guys miss while playing through injury is a plus, but multiple knee injuries is not a plus. He is hardly used as a receiver, and he is not a great receiver with 9 drops between 2022 and 2023. So underwhelming overall as a receiver, and that is where the fumbling issues are actually potentially an issue for me. I just don't know how strong his hands are. And like a lot of guys, when it comes to fumbles, like it's fixable, and mostly fumbles are fixable. They're not sticky, but when you fumble the ball a lot and you have brick hands as a wide receiver, that is honestly the only reason why Tutten is down as far as he is, because I think he is incredibly talented as a runner, much like you do about another back in this class who I believe you will be talking about at some point from 6 through 10. So that's how I feel about Tutten.
Yeah, Tutten did not crack my top 10 just
for he's a sold off guy. He's under 5'9", 210, 250.
I do love a good solid off running back. Me too. Yeah.
That's my type.
Yeah. Number 10 for me is Ohio State's Quinshon Judkins. And a lot of listeners, and I think, I don't want to call people casuals, but like draft lay people, I think it's like there's a lot of people who just really enjoy the draft and enjoy listening to things about the draft, talking about the draft. I think that might be jarring to draft lay people who, over the summer, we're hearing about how this Ole Miss dude who's been productive since his freshman season and had running back 1 great like hype from analysts over the summer coming into the season is running back 10. And what I have a 4th round grade, a day 3 grade on him, how that could be the case. But I think if once you start looking under the hood a little bit at his game, and when you can see him and Travion Henderson trading reps as well, it's pretty eye opening. From a juice perspective, from a lateral mobility perspective, even from a pass pro protective protection, because Travion's the best in the class. But that's not to say that Quinshon Judkins because it cannot throw his body around in pass pro, because I think if there's one thing Quinshon Judkins is more than willing to do, it is throw his body around almost to a reckless degree. So like I have very much like torn feelings about Quinshon Judkins, because my heart wants to love him for the dog that he is, but I'm also like, this guy needs to be in a very specific role. But it's a role that every running back room needs. It's like, I saw a tweet that was like, paraphrasing here, but like every running back room needs a youth pastor and a guy who's willing to run through your face. Ohio State's got it right, or something like that. Quinshon Judkins is definitely the run through your face kind of guy, almost to his own disadvantage, because if he needs 4 yards, he will run straight through the back of his own offensive lineman to get it. So I don't think the eyes are quite there. The vision and the patience is quite there with Judkins. But again, I think that's a role that every team needs. If you need a guy who to be a demon in short yard situations or in the goal line, like I think that can be Quinshon Judkins. I think his ankles are pretty stiff too. Not a lot of lateral ability, not a lot of ability to change directions. But again, he's a guy who's going to opt to run through your face anyway. So I don't think that's necessarily the thing. I think what I was most shocked about, though, based off of everything that I had heard about Quinshon Judkins to watching him over the summer and even into this season now, is that I anticipated him being a pretty explosive running back, and I don't think that's the case. Based on, you know, I mean, he's got massive quads. He was really productive freshman, sophomore season at an SEC school. So I was expecting a little bit more juice in his lower half, but I think that big time run that he broke against Notre Dame is almost the perfect example of his explosiveness, where like I legitimately thought he pulled something on that massive run against Notre Dame in the national championship, but he didn't. He legitimately just got caught from behind because he doesn't have a great deal of explosiveness. So I do think there's a lot of holes in his game, but at the end of the day, I think that every running back room needs a Quinshon Judkins. So he's sitting at running back 10 for me.
At running back number 9 for me, Kansas running back Devin Neal. Now, when we talked about building a running back before the season, I talked specifically, I can't remember if you had him there as well, but I talked about his big playability. And a lot like Ollie Gordon, who I don't think will be on either of our lists here, that wasn't there this year as much. I think the first level burst with Devin Neal is there. I think his ability to manipulate defenders, make guys miss, is there. The big play 40, 50 yard run thing, I don't think is there as much. Now, he gets those runs in Kansas's offense because they are a read option team. They have a mobile quarterback who is taking up another gap. And that's the thing. There's an extra gap to defend when you have a mobile quarterback and you are running a lot of option. Mm-hmm. He is running through truck-sized holes quite a bit. And that's just also part of playing in the Big 12. It's fake football. It is what it is. What I will say about him is, even though he has a lot of very clear situations, he is best in wide zone. Mm-hmm. I think that he does flash solid situational, like, I got to get north and south here. And so the short yardage ability is there with him. The one thing that is impressive with him that I don't think gets talked about enough is his build, because he's 5'10", 5'11", 220 pounds. And so you're talking about a guy who might not have the crazy long speed. And I honestly don't believe, even at 220 pounds, and I think part of the reason why we don't talk about him being a 220-pounder is that contact balance is pretty marginal overall. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of explosiveness into contact. And like when we talk about guys like even like Quinshon Judkins, and especially guys, you know, further up the list as well, like when we're talking about Omarion Hampton being able to just blow dudes over.
Absorb without... Yes. Bouncing off, like,
yes,
yeah,
yes, there's a lot of he gets hit and he's down. But yes, I like the manipulation, I like the snappy dead leg, that he has as well. He's pretty fluid overall. It's just that college run scheme, the huge gaps, the creativity, but there's some indecisiveness at the first level as well at times. That is why Devin Neal, for me, ends up at running back 9 and not a little bit higher.
Cool. I'll hit on Neal in just a little bit. Okay. For me, running back 9 is Arizona State's Cam Scatabu. And honestly, what this comes down to, in my notes, I like his ability to accelerate to top speed, but his top speed is a school zone. And so there's a reason it doesn't take him a while to get to top speed. And I think that's really the Achilles heel of his game and why I can't put him higher than an early day three grade on him. But early day three grade is even to say, though, that like, I very much think this guy's baller, and I very much think this guy has a role. And I hate to compare him to just another stocky white guy, but like, he compares to me a lot like Rex Burkhead and the role he carved out with New England over the years. Or like Dare Ogunbowale in Houston and in Tampa. Like that kind of role, I think, is a role that he could carve out. I could even see him like, who was it? It was like Jonas Gray scored four touchdowns in a game for the Patriots once as a role running back. Like that's the kind of thing that I think Cam Scatabu could do at the next level as well, because I do think he's a really good receiver, and they even proved that they could split him out wide and they could throw to him down the field against linebackers. Like that's, he has the ability to kind of create in that regard. The contact balance is there. It is there, but I think when we were just talking about Omarion Hampton's ability to absorb contact and not lose ground, I think Cam Scatabu is a little more like a bumper car, where he will take the contact and stay on his feet, but it does bounce him off his track quite a bit. And so I think that's kind of where I see his content balance. It's definitely there, but it definitely impacts his path, his track.
Can I counter that real quick, because it's something that I don't want to forget to talk about when I talk about
it. Yeah, go for it, man.
So there are guys who like kind of bounce off of contact. I also think that there are guys who are able to not initiate, but like understand that contact is coming, and they use that they're pre-reacting to coming off of that. So like, I think there's a difference between like a pinball player and somebody like, because I think Quinshon Judkins is a pinball player. But I think somebody like Cam is able to understand that that is coming and kind of get away from that a little bit. And that's where like, you don't get the contact balance like in Omarion Hampton, because he's just running through guys. He has the explosiveness to do that. Cam doesn't have that. So he gets his contact balance from the ability to kind of shy away from that contact that is coming to him.
Valid point. Valid point. Another issue I have with Scatabu's game is I think he dips his eyes a lot in pass pro. He's not a very good pass protector right now. He tends to get his head down a little bit. Do you disagree with that as well?
No. It's way worse. It's way worse than what you're giving it credit for.
He's not a very good pass protector. But again, he's got a muscle hamster frame. So
the desire's there.
The desire's there, yeah. And that's really what you need. But I do think he has that like great first level vision. And like at the NFL level, if you can catch passes out of the backfield, but again, he's not going to see the field on third down if he can't learn how to pass protect. So that's really going to limit his role until he can learn how to pass protect and get 4 or 5 yards when it's there. That's really what an RB3 in a running room, in a running back room can do. A change of pace running back 2 can do for a running back room. So yeah, I think that like Rex Burkhead-ish type role is kind of what he's carved out to. But again, that overall lack of explosiveness, like, and when I mean lack of explosiveness, I mean like net zero explosiveness, really puts him down my board a little bit here to running back 9.
Yeah. At running back 8 for me is where I have Ohio State's Quinshon Judkins. The more I watched him, the more I liked him, but I started off pretty low on him, to be quite honest with you. And I'm going to get through the negatives before I get to the positives, because I do want to finish on a positive note with Judkins, because I do feel like we have kind of shoved away the hype around him this year. There's practically zero creativity in the open field whatsoever. Eye discipline is completely gone after the first level. It's completely gone. He just puts his head down and he runs forward. I said painfully present bouts of running directly into blockers' backs. I have that on there as well. Ankles are hopelessly inflexible at speed. So I've talked about this ad nauseum at this point, but bend as a running back is something that he just does not have. And when you watch Travion Henderson
run wide zone
and turn a corner, and then you watch Quinshon Judkins in that same offense try to do the same thing, it just does not happen. But what he does have, and what I do love about him, is he's able to, when he is in low gear, string together some really explosive horizontal cuts. So when he is geared down, and a lot of guys are able to do that, but I think that he does a particularly good job at it. I think he's got a decent amount of patience and decisiveness at the first level. I think that as a, I call them lumberjack pass protectors, guys who dive at the legs, he chops dudes down, and he does it at a pretty high level. I think he's got a lot like somebody who I don't think we're going to talk about him either in the top 10, but Dylan Sampson, somebody who Quinshon Judkins, same as Dylan Sampson, when they get around the goal line, they turn into a different player. When they get around the goal line, they smell the blood in the water.
Foaming at the mouth.
They smell that goal line, and they are able to get there. What I do like about Judkins, even though he does have stiffer ankles, is he does have freedom of the throttle. So he is able to stop and go pretty well. And that's partially because he's got like short, choppy steps as well. And he's got fantastic ball security, 3 fumbles and 798 career college touches. So there's that as well.
Love it. I'm going to hit my number 8 real fast because it was your number 9. So this is where Devin Neal comes in for me at number 8 here. So I even had to text a scouting buddy of mine and be like, listen, man, do you guys like, I'm going to like a couple of them. Like, do you guys also see this? And they're like, yeah, we've noticed that he's putting on muscle and he's putting on weight, and it's really hampering the explosiveness because this isn't the same runner that was who he was as a freshman or sophomore. And again, if we want to talk about the amount of carries on a dude's body, the dude has 837 career touches. He's been starting since he was a true freshman, 4-year starter at running back as well. And so that top end explosiveness really, and I noticed it the same way with Judkins on his big run against Notre Dame. I noticed it on Devin Neal. He caught that swing pass and took it to the house against Colorado. And that's what was like, oh, dude, these guys are biting at your heels as you're trying to strain to get in the end zone. It's kind of where I noticed that like lack of juice that I don't think has been present in years past, but it's definitely definitely decreased over the years. But again, I do think he has, you mentioned that freedom of throttle with Judkins. I think that Neal has that stop go ability, the ability to cut on a dime. Not so much this year as years past, but he has had the ability to make defenders look like morons in the open field. But I do think at the end of the day, you mentioned that he's a pretty creative runner in the second level. I think his eyes could be a little bit better, but I do think at the first level, he does a good job to press gaps and then cut off of them, force linebackers to overcommit a little bit and then find a little crease to come back. And I think he can play really small through murky waters as well. Mm-hmm. So I do think he's still a bundle of fun, but I'm lower on Devin Neal than I was coming into the year because it just seems like the juice is on a downward trajectory with them.
All right. Yeah, it's tough. And that was the toughest thing with Ollie Gordon, because man, was I a fan of his. And I mean, he's playing at like 235 now. It's just not moving very well. At number 6, somebody who I didn't really expect to be my number 6 running back, but man, it's there. The juice is there. The big play ability is there.
Did you say 6 or 7?
Is there? So I'm going to 7.
We're at 7. Sorry.
At 7. Somebody who is super explosive. Mm-hmm. Fantastic receiver out of the backfield. If you would just like watch him play or just like watch Texas games, you would probably think that he catches more passes than he does actually carry the football. And that is Jadon Blue. A little bit of a surprise to see him declare. Also horrific, horrific ball security. 5 fumbles in 180 touches this year, which is not very good. But when you look at his game, it is a whole bundle of fun. Mm-hmm. Effortless top gear. Effortless. Both of the Clemson bombs that he had, just absolutely outrageous angle deleters. Explosive width on jump cuts. He's got incredibly flexible ankles to make you miss. He's manipulative with his eyes. His step frequency is Energizer Bunny-like. It kind of reminds me a little bit of watching a, funny enough, bigger version of Kyler Murray run, because Kyler Murray has that step frequency that is just like outrageous to watch with your eyes. Urgency to get downhill, even in wide zone looks. He throws his weight around as a blocker. He's not a great blocker, but he will try as a blocker. As I said, the first level explosiveness is conspicuous as well. He redirects with ease. And he finishes, at least flash the ability to finish catches through contact as well, which the opposite of somebody like Bashel makes me think that he can fix the issues with ball security.
Ball security.
Yeah, I actually have the numbers here. It's 7 fumbles and 270 career touches in college. It's pretty horrific. Pretty horrific. Cognitively, he's sped up. He needs more touches. He needs to see the field more as a runner to get that going. And he hasn't had much of an opportunity to show that like corner bending ability that we've saw from somebody like Henderson, just because he doesn't really touch the ball out of the backfield all that often. But the explosiveness that you get from him as a receiver, man, he's going to be fun immediately. If you were able to get him in like a Sean Payton offense, look out. Mm-hmm. Look out.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Again, I'll touch on him just a little bit later. For me, running back number 7, I guess that spoils it. There's only one running back after this. For me, running back number 7 is Kansas State's DJ Giddens. I will always, always, always fall back onto a dude with A-plus eyes. Like, I will fall back onto a dude with A-plus eyes. And not only that, but, like, even at second level, even with some throttle acceleration, he moves pretty smoothly. And he's a big dude. He's a bigger dude. So, and he moves pretty smoothly with the football in his hands. His eyes keep working as he gets through the second level into the third level, always looking for green grass. He'll always be memorable for making Shiloh Sanders look.
That's just another day at the office.
And that's another day at the office there. Yeah. And so when I see a running back, here's the thing with DJ Giddens. He doesn't offer anything on passing downs right now. He's not a very good pass protector. And he isn't a very good receiver. So he is a 2-down back. But I think this isn't, like, he can make an early impact as a 2-down back. And he's got a massive, he's about the same size as Caleb Johnson. So he's got the frame to learn how to pass protect if a coach can coach it up for him. And I think I see a little bit of contact balance there too. So it's not like the ability to play through contact isn't there at all. I just think he needs some refinement at 212 pounds there, even at 6'1". Flexible hips and flexible ankles at 6'1". Like, I'm all aboard, especially with the eyes at the first and second level. Even if he's not going to be a home run hitter, even if he's not going to be a third down back at the next level, at least early on in his career, like, this is a guy that can give you awesome production in late game situations and in early down situations. So DJ Giddens is running back 7 for me.
And at running back 6 for me, that is Arizona State's Cam Scataboo. For every reason that you talked about. And for me, just not giving a darn about the lack of explosiveness. For me, when I look just like at my grading scale, when I'm looking at these running backs, when I look at him, everything is high. Everything. He's good. The vision is there. The contact balance is there. The first level explosiveness is pretty average overall. But everything is outstanding. I even have like a big play ability trait. And even though the juice isn't really there, his ability to catch the football, his ability to make guys miss, because I think he's incredibly manipulative. And I think that he has the short area explosiveness, especially like I was talking about earlier, when geared down, that he's able to make guys miss consistently and create big plays. The pass protection is an issue. It's not only horribly ineffective, it is flat out dangerous for him. And so dropping the eyes, dropping the crown, is something he is absolutely going to have to fix at the next level.
Yeah.
But the way he runs is very much to me like somebody who is going to just consistently average 4.5 yards per carry, is going to break a ton of tackles. Like, even if the explosive plays don't come at the NFL level, his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, his ability to split out wide and be a mismatch as a wide receiver against linebackers, and his just flat out unwillingness to be tackled by the first player, I think is going to play very well to next level.
Yeah. I love so many aspects about his game, but I'm like deathly worried he's going to run like a 4.69.
Yeah, he might.
He might run
a 4.69. I don't care.
Awesome. All right, well, that brings running back six to me, and you know, I already hinted at it. It's Texas's Jadon Blue. All the things that you said, man, just ungodly explosive. Like, this is a guy who's going to find a way onto the football field because you have to get the football in his hands.
Very, very A-chain like, right?
Yes.
Just like
I was just about to say, like,
okay.
I think a team could put this kid in the slot, and like that's how you get him on the field.
Yeah.
Like, you could stick him in the slot and get him on the field that way as well. Very explosive. I don't think the patience of the vision is there just yet, but again, he doesn't run the ball a lot. Like, he doesn't get a lot of carries. And so I think there's some work to do there. No contact balance.
No.
So there are some weaknesses to his game, but like, he is ungodly explosive. He will catch everything out of the backfield. Again, that effortless ability to cut on a dime and make cuts, even at full acceleration without having to throttle down, turning he's lightning in a bottle. He's lightning in a bottle, and I'm willing to take that when we're talking about late third round into day three running backs, give me the explosive guys who have the potential to contribute in some way over guys that I have questions of how they might see the field at the NFL level. Like, and I think that's where I'm at with a guy like Jadon Blue. Like, I think you get this guy on the field, and you probably even have him return kicks in this new kickoff format. Like,
yeah,
there's so many ways you can get the ball in this guy's hand. And I think you have to find ways to do it because he's that explosive. So Jadon Blue, running back six for me to round this out.
Are there any names, just real quick, that didn't make your top 10, but I mean, that you feel like deserve a little bit of recognition, specifically because they aren't being talked about very much in this class? Like, who really stood out to you that's not being talked about enough?
Dude, LaQuint Allen will punch you in the freaking mouth as a pass protector. Like, that dude is awesome when he is pass protecting. Like, almost Travion-esque. Like, he will lift you and bury you. And then I do think, like, he's very kind of like Antonio Gibson-ish in his play style, where it's like, well, is he really a running back? Is he really a receiver? So it might be hard to find a role for him early on, but like, and he's not overly explosive down the field either. But again, he has that kind of ability to make a lot of cuts. He has the ability to effortlessly throttle, even if that high gear isn't ultra high. But dude, it's so fun to watch him pass protect. It's so fun to watch him pass protect. So I'm going to say LaQuint Allen.
All right, I'm not. we'll leave that at that. But for me, I have two. Ja'Cory Kroski. Let me do that again. Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt is one for me. 6-year guy. We didn't get to see any of him this year at Arizona outside of the first game because of eligibility issues. But man, this dude has some really fun tape at New Mexico and really fun tape against New Mexico in the only game he played this season. So guys, go and check him out. Nasty, explosive, violent, very much like what you were talking about with LeQuint with the pass pro. Makes no bones about stepping in front of free rushers and throwing his weight around. The other guy that I would just quickly like to bring up, Corey Kiner. Corey Kiner.
Oh, I love Corey Kiner too.
My kind of dude. Sawed off back, former four-star LSU transfer. First few steps are impressive, man. Bends, hit backside zone, runs really well. He keeps his feet moving. He is a pinball, and some guys can get away with it. And his contact balance when his frame is upset, like that's something that I really like about a lot of shorter backs overall, the muscle hamster types, is they're so low to the ground already that they just find a way to stay upright and stay moving forward. Even if they don't continue to go for 80 yards, they're able to somehow like bear crawl for another 3 or 4 yards while protecting the football. And that's something that I think that he does really well. As well. So those are two guys that I would like to bring up, guys who I don't think are being talked about enough, but should be.
Love it. Shout out Cincinnati as well. They've really etched out the market of like blue blood players who don't get playing time at blue blood programs and like, we'll come play here. They've really etched out a market there. So yeah, shout out Cincinnati for that. LSU transfer there, Corey Kiner. Cool. I think that's it. I feel like we should spend at least a minute or so talking about Dylan Sampson, because Dylan Sampson is a lot of people's consensus, like very much seen as a consensus top five back in this class, and neither of us have him as a top 10 back. So we probably should spend a second or two talking about Dylan Sampson. I think for me, what it starts out with is for a guy that broke track and field records in high school, I don't see that kind of explosiveness with pads on, man. Like I don't see it. And so I think that's tough. And I think it's tough to see his eyes struggle so much in an offense that spreads that out as far as they could for him. That's very tough for me. Like speaking about lack of creativity, like in a running back, the dude knows what his aiming point is and he's committed to the aiming point no matter what. And he's not looking for backside cuts. If it's murky, he's just trying to get what he can. So there's just an unbelievable lack of creativity.
There's a lot of Quinshon in his game, but without the physicality.
Yeah. And again, this guy ran a 10.5 meter dash in high school. And I don't see it on tape. I don't see that explosiveness on tape. Yeah, man. I don't know. So that's kind of where I'm at with Dylan Sampson.
I'm really surprised at just how lockstep we are with, like, everything that you said about the negatives about him is everything that I have written down in my weaknesses section for him. Too impatient pressing. The eyes are not great, particularly at the second level, but even at the first level, man, I have here his feet outpace his brain at the line of scrimmage, and he ends up just running straight into the back of offensive linemen. In an offense that is wide the open.
Yeah.
Like it just should not happen. And so for me, like too quick off his aim point in wide zone. You were talking about him sticking to the aim point. I see it a little bit differently. I see him, especially in wide zone particularly, he just brain short circuits and he has to get downhill. Like he just has to get north south right away. Like you were talking about with the lack of creativity at the first level, it's just not there. He just is like, I need to get to the line of scrimmage as fast as possible, and it really limits his ability to create consistently positive plays. And when I'm looking at a running back, what I want to see more than anything is the ability to avoid negative plays as often as possible while maximizing what is given in front of you. If you don't create a ton of explosive plays, that's fine. I can survive with that. If you are going to average 3, 4, 4, 6, 3, 4, 6, like if you can run like that, I'm cool with that because I have a forever forward view of running the football. But when you create negative plays because of your lack of creativity, that's where I really struggle, especially when you are 5'11", 200 pounds, and don't play with outstanding contact balance, and you don't really create a ton of explosive plays. You're kind of a grinder at 5'11", too. It's weird, but he scored like 75 touchdowns, so everybody loves him, but yeah, I don't know.
We're on the same page here. On the same page for sure. So that's it. We wrapped up our running backs. We've got 6 through 10. So again, mine going from 1 to 10 now, is Ashton Jeanty, Boise State, Caleb Johnson, Iowa, Trevion Henderson, Ohio State, Omarion Hampton, North Carolina, Trevor Etienne, Georgia, Jaden Blue, Texas, DJ Gidden, Kansas State, Devin Neal, Kansas, Cam Scataboo, Arizona State, and Quinshon Judkins, Ohio State.
And I have the same top five as Corey does, plus Cam Scataboo, Jadon Blue, Quinshon Judkins, Devin Neal, and Bashel Tutten.
Love it. All right. Well, that's another week of episodes for you guys. We'll be back next week. Next week is going to be a little touch and go. We'll figure it out.
Next week will definitely be touch and go. For sure.
Yeah. Combine plus Dalton's wife is coming into town. So it's going to be touch and go. We'll figure at least an episode or two out. I'll take a mic with me to Indianapolis, and we'll figure out some time to get some stuff done. But yeah, for now, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Have a great weekend.